The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A mystery disease has recently emerged in the southwestern region of the Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC, claiming the lives of perhaps 70, perhaps as many as 140 people in just 2 weeks. The illness is reported to cause flu-like symptoms, including fever, headache, cough, and anemia. But what do we know about the outbreak so far? And if it were to spread, how prepared is our world to respond? Joining me now to talk about this is Kingston Mills, Professor of Experimental Immunology at Trinity College in Dublin. Kingston, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
What do you know about this so far? Because it's hard, given where it's located, to get accurate numbers as to how many people are falling prey to this and, in fact, what it is.
Yeah, well, it's a difficult one to give precise answers on, unfortunately, because the information is sketchy. Now, the most significant information came from the WHO, the World Health Organization, on the 5th of December, and they said that there were 406 cases of this mysterious illness and 31 deaths. The locals have put the death rate higher at around 140. And the worrying thing is the death rate is very high. That's, you know, if the WHO estimates it's at 7%, it could be higher. And that's very high for an infectious disease if you consider that COVID-19, the death rate was 1%. So, you know, it's in the order of diseases like Ebola and Zika virus, which affected, you know, interesting, that those areas of Africa. Now, the big problem is testing to find out what it is. It's not even certain that it's an infectious disease, although yesterday there was a report in The Guardian saying that they'd started to test the samples from these patients, and the first 12 samples showed, 10 of them showed positive for malaria. Now, malaria is endemic in this region of Africa, so it is possible that they already had malaria and then they got something else, so a comorbidity, which malaria itself wouldn't have symptoms, respiratory symptoms, which these patients have. So it's unlikely to be exclusively malaria. It's more likely to be some other infectious disease that's affecting the respiratory tract.
When they test for malaria, though, many of the people will have had malaria at some point in their lives because it's ever present in that particular region. So when they test, are they seeing active malaria or are they seeing...
Well, it depends on which test they do, and I'm not privy to which test they did. This was based on what I read in The Guardian only. So you're absolutely right. I mean, lots of people in that part of Africa would have had malaria. And if they do what's called an antibody test for that, they'll pick it up in a huge number of people. So I think the malaria is unlikely to be the exclusive cause of this. And the death rate wouldn't fit with malaria anyway, because the death rate in malaria is not that high. It can kill. And the other interesting and worrying factor is that a lot of the people that have died are children under the age of 5. So again, that is unusual in that it's not COVID-like disease, obviously, because COVID doesn't really affect children as much as it does older people. The possibilities are things like a variant of influenza, because the symptoms are very influenza-like, and that can be detected pretty readily. So once they get the proper testing done, we should know what it is. It's not even certain yet that it's an infectious disease, but it's very likely that it is.
Now, the question of influenza and vaccination in that part of the world, and we do it regularly here every winter, and we follow the kind of influenza that has been detected in the Antipodes, and we manufacture our vaccines accordingly. I doubt very much there's a routine flu vaccination program in DRC.
No, I mean, the population of the DRC is 110 million. So, getting flu vaccines to that level of, and loads of these areas are remote. In particular, this area is 700 kilometres from Kinshasa, the capital. Infrastructure is very poor, and that's part of the problem with the testing. But in terms of getting vaccines out to all regions of a country of that magnitude is extremely difficult. And there's the other problem as well, of course, it is conceivable, but probably unlikely, that it could be a variant of influenza. And we've seen in the US this year that avian influenza started to infect cattle, and some human transmission as well of avian, and some deaths from avian flu. This was the H5N1. I think it's unlikely that it's an avian type virus. I think it's more likely to be some other unidentified respiratory illness.
How often do you, in your academic capacity, get notifications of some mystery bug that's out there? I mean, is it routine?
No, not at all. I mean, this is very unusual. We've had pandemics in my lifetime too, and they were the influenza in 2009 and COVID-19 in 2020, 21, 22. So, you know, this is very rare. That's not to say this won't happen again, and that's why, you know, a lot of the discussions around the handling of the COVID pandemic, the most important outcome of those discussions has to be preparedness for the next pandemic, and we can't be complacent, because inevitably there will be other pathogens, and largely these pathogens come from, you know, viruses, bacteria that are more disease causing than normal, would come from animals. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very likely that COVID came from animals, and of course the pandemic flus came from birds or cattle. So, you know, we've had a series of viruses shifting species and being more dangerous in the species that they move to.
Now,
that's the big issue.
Yeah, what you said there about our preparedness and what we learned from COVID, what has changed in terms of another mystery bug coming along that may become a pandemic? How prepared are we?
I don't think we're very well prepared in Ireland. I think other countries are way ahead. That's not to say we don't have testing and some infrastructure, but for example, in the UK, they've now put huge resources into two centres, two research centres that are specifically going to focus on infectious diseases and the emergence of rare pathogens, rare viruses and bacteria, and they're, you know, the infrastructure includes rapid testing, development of vaccines and development of drugs. A country as small as Ireland can't do that on its own, but it can be part of a European network that will be prepared for these potential pandemic viruses
and bacteria. You will recall at the beginning of the pandemic, and there was a choir in the United States where COVID ran through the choir, and there may even have been fatalities. And it was thought that they contracted it when they were moving the chairs around to set up the church hall or whatever it was for the choir. And it wasn't realised that the choir itself was the engine of infection, because it was airborne. So as they sang and shouted and so on, they were infecting each other. So have we learned that lesson, that the method of transmission is one of the most important things to isolate at the very beginning?
Yeah, I mean, that was a huge lesson from COVID. And remember, at the beginning, there was a lot of controversy about whether mask wearing was something that we should do or not. And then it was very quickly realized that it was a very good intervention to reduce transmission. And everybody bought into it in this country and many other countries as well. And it was a good intervention for a respiratory pathogen. So if your viruses or bacteria is in the upper airways or in the lung and you cough and sneeze, you're going to transmit it. If it's a gut pathogen, it's a different story, you know, where you have to be careful about hand washing and making sure that you don't contaminate yourself through fecal oral route. This is a huge issue. The respiratory pathogen is perhaps less of an issue, ironically, for developing countries, whereas there the issues tend to be more the gut-borne pathogens, where a lot of the water is infected with fecal matter, and then people bathe in it or drink the water that has not been purified and get infected. So in Western countries, developed countries, you know, the respiratory pathogens are a bigger issue. And here we have measures such as mask wearing, which can limit, doesn't stop the spread, but certainly can limit it.
Now, you mentioned in passing H5N1, and we know that there is contamination of this avian influenza of raw milk products that RFK particularly is recommending that all his followers will enjoy. And also, they're going to change the rules to make raw milk more readily available when he gets that top job in health. I mean, this is crazy stuff.
Absolutely crazy. I despair at a lot of what's coming out of the new regime in the US in terms of healthcare. And research as well. I mean, you know, talks of abolishing the National Institute of Health. It is, as a scientist, we're very worried about what could happen. You know, going back to the milk, cattle, there have been 15 states in the U.S. where cattle herds have, cows have been infected with this avian influenza. You know, it's a very simple way of pasteurizing the milk and cooking the meat. There's no, absolutely no risk to consumption of those products once they're pasteurized or cooked. So, you know, that's a very, very simple intervention to stop human transmission. Most of the transmission occurs with farm workers who are in direct contact with the animals, but broader transmission can be prevented by those simple measures. So it would be absurd to ban pasteurization of milk, you know, you're asking. And not only that, there are other bacterial infections, listeria, for example, which can infect, and even salmonella, milk and other products such as eggs. So without pasteurization or cooking, you know, you're at greater risk of getting these infections by not, you know, ensuring that the bacteria are killed.
Kingston Mills, Professor of Experimental Immunology at Trinity College in Dublin. Thank you very much for joining us. Now,
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.